Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What's up, everybody? It's Joe LaPuma. You are listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. As always, I am with my guys, Mr. Matt Welty.
Here we are, new and improved.
Yes, he is new and improved. He's playing through the pain. And of course, my man, Mr. Brendan Dunn. How are you, buddy?
I'm in here. I'm feeling all right. I forgot, playing through the pain. That's the tooth issue you had, Welty?
Yeah, he had a little issue this weekend, but it's only Tuesday and he's here bright and early. How are we feeling, Welty? You had a root canal.
Yeah, I know I had mentioned previously on another podcast that I kind of was feeling like crap for no reason and didn't know why. And I finally realized that I had a cracked and infected tooth down to the roots. But that was causing like an ear infection and then a sinus issue that was ongoing for like a month and a half. And I was like, what's wrong with
me? Your whole chakras off.
Okay, so so the ear infection was not because of a certain product that we won't know. Okay, you passed blame on it. You passed blame on it, but okay, just check.
Well, that was a while back, but
okay,
still possible.
This was and you know what? I got it done in a little bit of pain, but I feel better overall.
Nice.
I'm so glad to hear that. When I had a root canal this summer, I have experienced so little physical pain quite like that in my adult life. Just not being able to sleep, trying to lay down in different ways or put ice on it. Just the pounding in your jaw like that.
We'll get off this top. It's not the best content, but root canal feels like it starts okay, 45 minutes, still okay. And then you're like, this isn't that bad. And then it gets worse as it goes on. So anyone having a root canal, we feel for you. And he's living proof, Mr. Matt Welty, that, 48-hour recovery. So all good. Do you guys notice the first camo Bape hat? You know why I'm wearing it. Does anyone know why?
Why?
Back in your cutty mode?
Yeah, I'm back to 2009, 2010 mode. Thank you, Brendan. I thought, Dunn.
Joe,
thank
with
you.
The vape cap on.
I thought you were going to say that you wore this hat during your Butcher's Block interview with Ronnie Feig.
I remember that, though. I thought about that. I thought about that this morning. I had the Pink Floyd shirt on and an H&M denim shirt, to be honest. That's exactly what it was. But
okay,
we're back.
So
in cutting.
Joe's got the archival Bape camo cap on. He's feeling like you're feeling, what would you say, 2009, 2007?
No, 2009, Man on the Moon. Hold on, let me just check.
Okay, so where was Joe LaPuma at psychologically back then? Cudi's new album released just this past week, and you're feeling nostalgic for that peak Cudi era of Complex when he was on the cover every other month.
Guys.
Tell me, what did it
feel
like?
I got a haircut in the city. This album's great, by the way. You guys know.
Welty, wait, you got a haircut now or back then?
No, I'm going to listen. I'm going to finish the story. Welty always says that the Kid Cudi Ogre cover, the graffiti under it, I did the cover story. That's something that he really, really inspired him to work at Complex. So 2009, though, Man on the Moon 1, and then a year later, Man on the Moon 2. And this week, Cudi completes the trilogy. So this is what I'll tell you guys. This is how deep I'm in it. I got a haircut in the city Saturday. And I put the album on and I walked 23rd Street, the old office. And listen, it doesn't look anything like it did when we were
just
working
to get the
there.
Feeling back.
Yeah, but he restored the feeling. Great album. I don't know if you guys listened to it yet, but you guys should definitely listen to it. I brought the Bape camo out, and we're back. We're feeling good, man. It took me back to a different time. Man, that was over a decade ago, and here we are, Complex Sneakers Podcast, 56th episode, LT, the LT episode, I call it. LT,
what is
Taylor. Right. Okay, yeah. Well.
We're in cliques.
Huh?
We're in cliques.
Cliques. I got to say, you were outside, Joe, in the city. I was outside a little bit, had to get some fresh air because I'm about to quarantine again. You know, we're staying safe. We're staying socially distanced from people, and I have to mention that because if I see you in the city and you recognize me, I'm happy to take a photo with you. Always happy to interact with the fans, wherever it is, physically, digitally. But now is not the time to put your hand around me or go for a dap if we're taking a photo together. You know, I'm not even doing that with my loved ones or the people that I know. So we gotta keep that distance.
It's tough though, let me tell you, because you see, because it messes with you because you'll be out. Like I've been out at dinner, right? And mm-hmm. I've walked out of a restaurant, you know, distance and masked up, of course. And
gloves on?
No gloves. Gloves. I did gloves in March, I think.
Yeah.
Gloves, okay. But we're okay on gloves. But I've walked out of a restaurant recently and like saw someone who I haven't seen in like not 10 months. And I am pretty close friends with this person. Not really close friends.
But this is somebody you actually know. Dude, not a random person like on the street.
It was like I was seeing my brother. My brother. And you want to go in for a hug, but you don't. You got to be safe. The other thing is, I went to Utopia Bagels last week. Dolo mm-hmm. just drove, got in the Uber, went to Queens.
Your driver took you.
No, he didn't. He didn't. But he took the Utopia Bagels. They took me back, and there was into like where the bagels are being made. Blah blah blah. And there was a lot of people, and you leave, and you're like, oh man, you know, they were all masked up. But like it is to your point, Dunn. You forget because you're so excited to see people.
Yeah. Wealthy, have you seen anybody lately? I feel like you can't relate to this. Wealthy is the one who's been sequestered the most.
No, I'm not a sort of person, not that I'm being unsafe, but I'm not like this person who's bunkered in my house because I'm afraid of the world sort of situation. But at the same time, you know, living in Jersey City, it just feels like I'm in a world apart. Mm-hmm. From New York, even though I live like the same distance as you guys do from Manhattan, out here it just kind of feels like really like apocalypse land to a certain extent. It, like I haven't left my block. I don't leave the block.
It's just so you and the landlord playing pool.
Yeah, I don't go anywhere. So you guys have to go to the city, and you know you run into people, and there it's like I just go around the same corner every morning and get Dunkin' Donuts and don't see anyone. So
that's tough, but also I guess
I feel
it's
like you're doing
been,
it right. I mean,
yeah, if you've been
I
doing
be
it 10
careful,
months, it could be tough, but you know, there is some sort of nice aspect to kind of being siloed like that. Another thing I want to get into last week, Complex Land Virtual Festival.
Oh yeah.
The books moved, guys. Let's thank our audience.
200
signed. Yeah, 200 signed books moved. We can't thank you guys enough.
I still want to know though, because we did see one customer service email where somebody complained, and this is the type of email you see from your friends who own sneaker stores when people are trying to bot stuff and they send a fake email afterward being like, my son got a hold of my credit card and ordered 20 pairs of shoes, you have to cancel this order. Somebody emailed saying, my son bought 8 books with my credit card, I don't know how he got a hold of it, please cancel this order. Do we think that was somebody trying to bot this situation, or was the
definitely
kid really eager to get books for the whole crew? Are we canceling the order? What's the plan?
We should have just said fuck it and made them deal with the consequences, because I don't want to not to give exact info or anything, but the emails were just funny because it was like soccer mom 07. It's like
I can't remember the address.
It's like lawnmower 59 at yahoo.com, and you're just like, how are all these emails connected to the same person? Like, this is so fake.
I'm glad people did get the book. So great one to put under the Christmas tree. Did you guys get your shopping done already for Christmas?
Little by little, it's coming together. Little by little.
Yeah. Welty?
I'm going to do it probably tomorrow. I was just all laid up this weekend eating pancakes. That was the go-to food.
What, because of the tooth?
Yeah, pancakes.
I'm glad you made them or what?
No, I ordered so much Seamless this weekend.
Nice.
I ordered more. I ordered more.
Put that Seamless battery in your bag. Would Joe Puma post a caviar order on Slack?
Oh, yeah. That was a meal. Yesterday, that was a meal. Decisions. The Leone's with the chicken cutlet and the super sod. Whew. Heat rock.
I got to say, I got all my Christmas shopping done, and now I'm in that terribly anxious phase where I'm looking at the Shopify shop app, not a sponsored moment, and watching all the packages and figuring out when they're going to get delivered and whether or not I'm going to be here, you know, waiting on pins and needles. I don't think we're going to be interrupted by one now. I got to ask, are you guys tipping your delivery people? Not the food people, but, you know, the UPS. Should I give the UPS person a little bit of money at the end of the year here? Because I've been getting a lot of packages.
I don't.
It's hard because sometimes it's a lot of different people.
Oh, I don't see them because...
Oh, the doorman. Your doorman. Oh, you can't relate at all. Excuse me. No. So, Joe, for people who don't live in a building like that, like, I have to...
I think you should. I've been tipping, like, a lot of the... over tipping.
Of course.
Yeah. So I definitely would. And the doormen subsequently in my building, like, take care of them, obviously. And there's a lot of them. So
there's none of them in my building.
They've been working nonstop, like, no days off. And the other thing, to your point, done, the packages, like, the whole lobby is filled with packages. And it's like, if you don't get them out, like, you keep getting reminders. It's been one day. It's been 1.5 days since your last notice for your package. So everyone's trying to get the packages out of there because during Christmas, it gets so crowded downstairs.
Christmas is coming up. Welty, do you know yet what your Christmas plans are? I know we've been talking about it a little bit.
I'm going to figure it out this week. I need to get a crown put on my tooth, which is taking up my precious time. So
you're going to go to Greg Yuna and get the 14 karat gold crown? Let me know. I'll set it up. Or Uncle Dom. You want me to? Uncle Dom could do it.
Who's my Uncle Dom?
My uncle works in the jewelry district. He's one
is
of the
that
only.
True?
Yeah. He's one of the only Italians who works in the jewelry district. You didn't know that? He's gotten a lot of celebrity clientele their ring. Deirdre Maloney, John McFeeters went to him. So, yeah.
Jeweler to the star.
Yeah, jeweler to the stars. I'll take you. We put the mask on. We go right to Uncle Dom. It's easy.
What's the friends and family rate like?
We'll see. Don't worry about it. Depends on your behavior on that week. And then if you're good, you get a good rate. If not, we upcharge you.
Nice.
I got a pack. So I didn't tell you guys about this, and not to talk about purchases, but I found...
Joe spent another $4,000 on a pair of shoes.
No, nothing. And I was going to text you guys, but I saved it. Argonne's $400 pair. It's good, right? It's a good price. And then I got Sambas for $250, the original ones.
Nice. Samba Dunks,
and,
not
yeah, Adidas. Yeah, both Dunks. And the Argonne's I got because, one, Chris Gibbs' story on this podcast.
Yes.
And Jason Sudeikis.
I know.
We've talked about
the Argonne's in the past 6 months. Yes. I felt that same way of seeing that shoe and being like, I kind of want to just go back and buy it for historical purposes. You said $400?
$400, pretty good. DS? And they're like, they are DS, but they're like aged. You know what I mean?
There's a patina to them.
Yeah, definitely, which I love. So, and it goes back to the Nick Diamond podcast last week. Having these conversations, like when Chris Gibbs was talking about the Argonne's, I was like, I want these because of that. And Jason Sudeikis on sneaker shopping, but Nick Diamond, the stories, and to see that passion. We said it off the podcast, but him taking off the Habibi Dunks and just being so into it. Man, one of my favorite episodes for sure. So if you haven't listened to it, definitely catch up on the Nick Diamond episode that went live last week.
Joe, can I ask where you got the Argonne Dunks? I don't know who's sitting on stuff like that.
Total independent person who I know I've known for a while and is just like moving. And he worked
not
with
Rudy Calderon of Yao Ming fame.
Not Rudy Calderon who got Yao Ming stolen 7'7" in the South Shore Mall in front of his face. Not him. But someone who you guys know, I don't want to blow up his spot, but just like someone who you definitely know, made some pickups, I got good prices, and I just say these conversations, you know, not to get too kind of sentimental, but the conversations that we're having on this podcast really re-inspiring, and to have someone like Nick Diamond on the podcast is like, especially because I associate the Tiffany Dunk with a shoe that I chased for so long, and to hear the insidery stories that he told last week was just great. And to be honest, I'm happy about this week's podcast because we have another great storyteller, and let's get to it right now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Our guest on today's episode has touched virtually every part of the sneaker industry. He started out as a co-host of the Forward Thinking Weekly Drop podcast in the early 2000s, a sneaker and fashion weekly discussion way before the podcast space was what it is now. He then went on to be a brand manager and designer for Boston-based Concepts. After moving on, he would creative direct for Boylston Trading Company and start his own brand, Business as Usual. His sneaker design prowess led him to collaborate on models like the Reebok Instapump Fury, Reebok DMX 10, and the instant classic Adidas Forum Crest. But the one design that landed him legendary status was the New Balance 999, dubbed the Kennedy. In 2017, he took his talents to Reebok, and his latest project hits close to home, working on the three-pack of Hot Ones X Reebok silhouettes that are currently available. We're looking forward to getting into all that history with our old friend, the current director of brand and product storytelling at Reebok, Frank the Butcher.
Wow. No, peace.
How you doing, man?
I am good. I am good. Healthy. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good.
We're feeling all right. Well, we just got through a root canal, but we're feeling all right.
Root canal. That's real.
Yeah.
That's real.
Frank, we want to take it all the way back with you. I want to start back in Worcester. Am I saying it right, Frank?
Yeah, Worcester.
Mm-hmm. Worcester.
Worcester, Mass.
Worcester, Mass.
About 45, 55 minutes west of Boston.
And what did sneakers look like out there growing up?
It was the same, you know. It was, I mean, obviously information flowed a little differently. So my sources were magazines, no pun intended, The Source magazine, and rap videos, album covers, you know what I'm saying? That was really my source of, you know, what to get and what was the barometer of cool. And then I had to, you know, make those things happen. Right. But it was a different world. We had a store called Kangaroo Crossing that was very much on the forefront of, you know, receiving all these, you know, when Jordan brand started, when Jordan, the line started really growing and, you know, all these specialty lines, they had it. So, you know, it was a good mix of being very into hip hop culture and being aware of all the nuances of that. And then, you know, having spots in the city that I can actually connect some of the dots.
And what were some of the silhouettes that you were seeing in The Source or in music videos that really you gravitated to right away?
Well, I know the Jordan 3, you know, Black Cement is this, you know, default answer, Jay-Z, you know what
course,
I mean?
Of course.
But in the beginning, it was really different. You know what I mean? It wasn't just some layup. It wasn't just some, like, of course, we you know what I mean? This was popping. It wasn't popping. There was nothing before it that looked like it. So when I started seeing that, you know, and that sneaker was out for 2 years, right? So that was the, you know, the model that was out for 2 years while they got things figured out, right? So there was 2 years of, you know, Boogie Down Productions, My Philosophy video, where he's wearing black, you know, black cement.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And it's just, he's performing acapella and he's in front of a Jeep and he has like a leather jacket on. It's like my mind's blown. You know what I mean? It's like the music, the fashion, you know, Three Times Dope have a legendary album cover where they wore all three colors, the first three colors of the three. So when, you know, obviously the whole, you know, Dwayne Wayne thing, right? And Different World and that whole thing. Like a lot of that stuff was brewing. It was brand new. It wasn't obvious like it was now. You could rarely turn to someone else in your circle to have like an in-depth convo about it. It was just sprinkles of people noticing these things. So that really motivated me and gave me like an extra interest in, you know, in this kind of stuff, you know?
Frank, I know Worcester's, you know, it's a different city than Boston, but, you know, the whole Massachusetts thing, I think a lot of people don't realize is how big Adidas was in Boston in the 80s, thanks to people like Ed OG, you know. And what was your experience with that?
That was very true. And the closer you got to Boston, the stronger the hold, right? Like the more of a grip there was, right? The further away from Boston, it was more preference. It was like, nah, I'm down with Boston, or I got family in Boston, or I know, you know what I mean? It's the nearest major city, and it was that kind of thing. But there were other people that it wasn't a game, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a preference. It was, you know, they lived in a neighborhood, they lived in a climate, they lived among folks that, you know, that was the uniform of choice. It meant more than just fashion, you know what I mean? So the further you got from Boston, of course, there was this appreciation, especially with the generation right above me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. 2-3 mm-hmm. years older than me, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Those older guys, there was a real grip. But again, that same era I'm talking about, that 88, 89, that Mars Blackman, that Jordan era, that when music and sneakers start converging, when there's really a platform, that started to supersede all the legacy, you know what I'm saying? All the, I'm only down with Adidas. Of course, we loved Adidas. I did a project. I'm very fond of Adidas. But in Worcester, there wasn't an allegiance. There was more of a preference. You know what I mean?
You run in the same circles as like the OGs. You have so much respect from like Clark Kent and the New York guys. What do you think was the biggest difference between New York and Boston back then, when in terms of sneakers?
Again, I'm from Worcester, just to clarify. So, you know, back then, I think it was about access, right? I think that, you know, I might be able to see some things, again, through receiving it through media, through culture, through music, through rap videos, but not everything is actually present. You know what I mean? And you know that, right? That was a symptom of, you know, developing product for particular regions that did well. And that's it. We didn't really have faith that shit would sell anywhere else. So, you know, so there was a lot of that. There was a lot of access issues. But, you know, as the culture grew, I use the word culture loosely, man. Like, it's, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's, you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, when the interest grew, when more people got into it, the access opened up. And then when I got old enough to start taking a trip to New York, mm-hmm. I started really connecting further, the dots even further, where the things that I've seen and now I can touch them. You know what I'm saying? That was really the difference. But the interest, I mean, number one, it was born in New York, so it's permeating out of New York, right? But the signal was received. You know what I'm saying? Like, we caught the signal.
Do you remember what those sneaker stores were when you first came to New York? Because for me, that was a big moment, being able to be in the city for the first time and see all these places that, for me, you know, being younger, I had seen on the internet and that only existed as JPEGs. Like, where were you going for the first time when you went to New York to see sneakers?
I think one of the first real trips was downtown Brooklyn. You know, I had a friend who lived in Worcester with me, who was from New York originally, and his mom still lived out there. So early high school, we catch the Greyhound, go out there, freeze our ass off, you know what I mean? Walk the city, try to find some NYC Air Force Ones, bring them back home, you know what I mean? That whole thing. And my wife's originally from Queens. Her family is from Queens. So I've been with her since I was 13, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So there was a lot of going to see her family. They become my family. So Jamaica, Queens, that whole Jamaica Ave, it became, you know, another place where I can, especially being from Worcester, dip over there. That shit was kind of in the future, right? If you grab something there, you might be, you know, a year ahead of the curve when you come home. So right. There was a lot of benefit to those trips.
And Frank, I think the moment when a lot of people started to notice you was the Weekly Drop podcast, as Joe mentioned, co-hosted by yourself, Jeff Carvalho from High Snob, and Rob Hepler. I remember one of the first stories that kind of gave you a little bit of notoriety on the internet is that you had ended up buying a bunch of Spizikes like before they came out, and everyone was blown how you just went and was like, I'm going to buy all of these sneakers before they drop.
Yeah, I remember that vaguely, and I remember sitting on a lot of them too. You know what I mean? So that was lesson number one. You know what I mean?
Was it the black colorway? The first one?
No. It was the white. It was like the true blue.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
With the yellow.
Yeah, and they came out like, for some reason I came up on them a little early. You know, just because you could don't mean you should.
Yeah. But I say the weekly drop. We look nowadays, everyone has a podcast. Do you ever look back and think like, man, we were so ahead, and not ahead in 2015, not ahead in 2012. This was like, what was it? 2006, 2005.
Yeah.
So ahead. How did that come about? And like, do you ever look at that now and you're like, look at this space?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I gotta give all due respect and all due credit to Jeff and Rob. They already had it established. You know, let me say something about both of them. Jeff, he was always in the future. Okay. This motherfucker sending me the invite to Gmail. Like, yo, psst, hey, check this out. I'm like, who cares? Wow. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Jeff always had one eye into the future, and he, you know, and he'd apply that into what we're doing. So podcasting was something that, you know, he was just very much up on, you know, and it was different. Obviously, it wasn't a streamable thing. It was a downloaded file. So much extra work. It wasn't as, you know, as user-friendly as it is today, but they was on that. I didn't know, yeah. What is that, you know? And then I met Rob. He had someone, I think he was related to someone in the city, in Worcester. So okay. I met somebody, and you know, and again, that kind of thing is small and brewing and growing. So when you meet somebody with these types of interests or insights, you quickly, you know, hey, introduce you to somebody. So I met Rob. Yeah, and they were basically, you know, I met both of them. They were doing their thing. They both, you know, lended a particular early perspective to what was brewing in sneakers and streetwear. And they had weekly drop was already popping and viable without me. And when I joined, you know, I added the, which was just normal to me. You know what I mean? Which was everyday shit to me. But they, you know, the hip hop component, the, you know, what sneakers meant on the street as opposed to what they mean, you know, in more controlled environments, right? You know, in sneaker circles and such. So the bridge from what we were doing and talking about sneakers and all the street culture things and connecting them with hip hop, you know what I mean? I brought that in, you know, and you know, it opened up a whole new world. I got to give them shouts of respect because, you know, a teen parent without any college education, I seen an opportunity and someone opened the window, and that's the window I climbed through, and here we are, you know, X amount of years later, you know.
Was that your first proper entry into the sneaker business?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you ever dream of it, or was it something you'd planned?
No. Not to get all, you know, somber or whatever. My little brother, 21 years old, died about a year before I met Rob and Jack. So, and died in a car accident. He was my best buddy. You know what I mean? He was my little brother, 6 years younger than me. And it really threw me for a loop, depression, you know. I just wasn't feeling really good about myself. So I was, you know, young family, and I was working, and I worked in a metal shop. That's where Frank the Butcher comes from. My friends would joke because I had this blue collar existence. I go check them out and they're chilling, they're running the streets, and you know what I mean? And I come in with my uniform on, and they just, you know. But you know, when he passed away, I had to reevaluate the things that I was doing. I wasn't feeling really good about myself, and my job laid me off. You know, I asked them to, and they obliged, and they gave me a nice little package, and they so I could sit down. And in that sitting down, I started to discover all these other things. And I think with that sitting down, I started exploring the you know, what the internet has to offer a little bit more. Now that I'm sitting right and understanding, it was, you know, everything wasn't obvious. You know. And that's how basically the transition happened, man. It was like, yo, I need to start something new. I need to do something. I linked with the weekly drop, and it wasn't a business. I know you're saying like the first steps of the sneaker business. By no means was it a business. We weren't making any money. We were spending money. And there was times where we couldn't afford to do things. We couldn't get to Magic or Slate or whatever it was at the time. shit, one of our first trips together to Slate, Bun B paid for it.
Wow. Damn it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So
just to chop it up with you guys, or he respected what you guys were doing, or what?
Bun B, he is
the nicest person in ever. Yeah. Yes. The nicest person.
And very
nice
aware.
Bun B when I met him at the Source Awards.
He was very aware. So he was up on Weekly Drop early, very early. I'm talking about, you know, early. Like, who's listening? Nobody should be listening. And Bun is listening. And we had set up this this toll-free number or whatever, you know what I'm saying? For you to call in and leave a message, right? which is common now. But I'm telling you, at the time, we're like, yo, what the fuck are we doing? You know what I mean? And Bun called. And he left a message. Yo, what's happening? It's Bun B. I fuck with y'all. I love the Weekly Drive. And I'm like, you know, so being the resident, you know, like hip-hop guy, you know, on the show, I broke down who Bun B was and how amazing this is. And just through that connection, you know, he helped us out when we didn't have the funding to get out there, you know. Traveling from Massachusetts to Vegas is no joke, you know what I'm saying, back then. Really with no promise and no, you know what I mean? There was really no business, no money being made. It was just passion.
And how did you get hired at Concepts? Because the Concepts thing happened basically right after the Weekly Drop, right? And I feel like a lot of people first knew you because of your work at Concepts.
Yeah, so basically when I linked with Weekly Drop, it brought me closer into the city, into Boston, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm running in those circles now, and I'm going to some events. And just, I mean, again, it's not a ton of stuff, you know what I mean? But with those moves, you know, I met the Concepts guys. I met Tarek. Tarek was on the verge of building out the new standalone, what was the new standalone Concepts back then. That's probably I'm not good with linear timelines. That's, you know, maybe 06 or something. So he was prepping. And in that preparation, he's, you know, that team is thinking about, yo, what are we going to do? We need this, we need that. Collaborations started becoming, you know, a way a shop can separate themselves from the pack. You know what I mean? There wasn't many shops that can collaborate. And when you did that, you kind of rose your stock and it opened up new opportunities. And they were just looking for a way to manage all that and figure that out, you know? So, one day I'm just there and I'm talking to Tarek, and I know the guys, I'm, you know, buzzing in and out with, you know, on the strength of Rob and on the strength of Jeff. I'm mostly on the strength of Rob. And it just, you know, yo, why don't you come aboard and help us do this? And, you know, and I had zero, I mean, there wasn't even a blueprint. There was no plan. It was zero plan, bro. There was zero plan. But it was like, okay, now that you're here, let's figure out a plan. And
How long did it take you to realize how crazy Dion was? do you remember the first time you met him?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't even think he liked me really much in the beginning.
What?
You know what I mean? Dion is, Dion is special. He's great. He has a personality. You know, it's like to know him is to love him. You know what I'm saying? To know him is to love him. I know he has this, you know, exterior, this, you know what I mean? You know, but he's great.
You guys went to an Everlast show together one time?
Yeah, we went to Everlast show and he fucking called it, man. He was like, yo, you see that guy right there with the, what'd he say? Yo, what did Dion say? So Everlast comes to town. He's like, yo, come to the show. And it's at the Paradise, I believe. Paradise. I don't know where it was. Somewhere in Boston. Harper's Ferry in Austin. So we come through, you know, Everlast is Everlast. He loves sneakers, you know. And the thing is, what's so crazy about this time is that some people didn't know. People went to Everlast show and they just know Everlast for playing the guitar and whatever. They don't even know this whole other thing that he's into. Like, they're not even hip to it, right? So, you know, Everlast come by the shop and all that. So we go to the show. Rowdy crowd, obviously. You know what I mean? It's Everlast. Dion sees this dude kind of walking on his toes. You ever see them dudes, like college dude? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
ready.
You know, like, yeah, like trotting like a gazelle or something. And he had his collar up on his polo shirt. And Dion called him. He said, yo, that dude's looking for a fight. Yo, you see his shirt? You see how he's wearing his shirt? You see how he's walking? He's looking for a fight.
The angle on the collar.
yeah. And I don't know, within 10 minutes, something happened. Beer is everywhere. I'm covered in beer. I looked, the dude got his shirt off. Wow. Yo, he called it. You know. And he knows that with those circles, so.
Like, as you mentioned, though, that's when you, like, first got your foot into working on collaborations. You mm-hmm. know, you guys did Timberland projects. I was looking for it back here. I can't find
that
it.
That was
but the I had first. I had the New Balance 1500s, the brown ones with the red. I think there's the Freedom mm-hmm. Trail shoes. Is just like a era or mm-hmm. whatever. But what was it like just going from, you know, a guy you did a little podcasting and just like being really into sneakers to all of a sudden, like, you're designing your own sneakers?
Sometimes it was some pressure. It was a lot of pressure because every, you know, and at the time, it maybe I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it as the hustle, the struggle, we're going to get this going. You know what I mean? But what we were trying to accomplish was unheard of. Just think of the shit we was trying to do. Think of mm-hmm. the things that we were trying to sew together and make sense of, right? Like taking these fragmented thoughts, you know, that are so common now, right? The boutique mentality, this configuration of all these, you know, items and products that won't necessarily sit together, right? So when you have that, we started evolving that. Now, how do we express that through collaboration? How do we do things that really make people go, they're doing a Red Wing, you know, kind of before the Red Wing thing, they're doing yeah. a Red Wing? Like, we'd always get that, on the verge of maybe it not working out feeling, you know? Like, you know, nobody's really doing Red Wings, you know what I mean? This can go wrong, and then somehow we'd make a way. But back then it wasn't easy. It wasn't common. These conversations needed to be pitched. We needed to talk. They needed to see value in these companies. You know, there was only a handful, you know, obviously Supreme is kind of the exception. And then right after that, you had the Stussy, which is in that same category. And then like the Undefeated, A-Life was really, you know, working back then. And, yeah. You know, and then you had some other, you know, like the Japanese stuff, right? But really, there was only like a handful. So mm-hmm. everything we did, we needed it to, you know, we really wanted it to work, right? And there was no way to really measure if it worked or not until we sold it, you know? So it wasn't just all fun and games. The Kennedy was, there was some arguments. No, I look back, it's like, it's not an argument, but there mm-hmm. was some, you know, conversation. There was some debate about whether we were doing the right shoe, whether we were doing, you know, whether that arrangement of colors and materials, you know, were viable. I remember someone at New Balance was great, and I, you know, have a good relationship with him. The person we were dealing with was really adamant about removing the tan for some reason. He was like, that tan's not going to work. It's like, yo, what are we doing here? Like, you know, it was like the combination of trying to do something new with enough familiar to bring some comfort to everybody, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because every time at bat was important.
Was there ever any trouble over the name, the Kennedy name on that New Balance 999 from 2011?
Yeah, a little bit of trouble on that.
Yeah. what happened?
Yeah. So big shout to Woody from Sneaker Freaker.
Of course. Okay. Legend. Yeah.
I mean, say that again.
Legend.
Okay. Legend. And his books were coveted, you know, the cover of a Sneaker Freaker, mm-hmm. can change the trajectory of your brand, of your shop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The cosign, the validation was real. So friend of mine, still doesn't mean that he's going to put you on the cover, no matter how. He was just, you know, his integrity about choosing these things was so on point. So send them the Kennedy images, like the first round of images, just to kind of show them like, yo, here's what's going on. Here's what it is. It's inspired by, you know, the nautical culture of Cape Cod and Massachusetts towards the coast, you know, and just as context, you know, like the Kennedy thing, you know, that whole feel, that mm-hmm. whole, you know, so he hit me back. He was like, hey, check this out. Love it. You know what I mean? Send me the shoe. We're going to, you know, do it, you know, make it happen, whatever. So boom. All right. Win. A couple convos go by and he's like, hey, what are you calling this shoe? And I'm like, we don't really got a name. You know, yeah. we don't have a name. You know, I don't know. And he was like, why don't you call it the Kennedy? And I'm like, All right. I didn't clear it with New Balance. So we didn't clear it with New Balance on. We didn't clear it on behalf of Concepts with New Balance. And we didn't think it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. We didn't even consider any fallout. You know, New Balance was dealing with some sensitive trademark issues with a previous project, something coming out of Japan. If I recall correctly, something come out of Japan that, used Ivy League inspiration, which is a little too close for comfort. And you know, mm-hmm. it was just like, yo, check this out. We can't be throwing these names around. So, when the book hit, it was one part, everybody excited. And the other part, New Balance going, well, we didn't approve that. And we had to kind of talk about it, which I understand. I totally understand, you know.
And Frank, you did the Adidas Forum Crest the same year. So talk about that project. I remember three colorways. You sent them to me. I remember being at that 23rd Street office. It was like the smoothest, like, you know, they'll tell you I'm not the biggest Adidas guy compared to like some other brands, but those high tops, the three colorways, talk about that project, like knocked it out of the park. And it was the same year as the New Balance project. What was it like working on those simultaneously?
You know what? It's been a long time. I didn't even consider it with the same year. Now looking back, obviously they were. I don't know. I think just to clear something up on the forum, right? So, and enough time has passed, but mm-hmm. I was working on that project, the same project, exactly what it is, for Concepts previous to me leaving Concepts. Okay. Not to speculate, you know what I mean? I'm not sure what happened. It was a tough shoe, you know, three very high shoes, a cultural story, but still might not be strong enough to sell this kind of shoe to our kind of consumer, right? It's one of them things, right? It's like in retrospect, we look back and we're like, oh, fire. While we were doing it, we're nervous, like, yo, is anybody going to wear the shoe this high? So we were working on it. I moved on. And I got a call one day and said, hey, you know, Concepts has decided to move on from the project. Would you like to pick it up since it's your project, you know? Mm. And just to reiterate, the project, exactly what it was, exactly what I did previous, you know, played, you know, fine tuning, you know, at post. But yeah, so Adidas hit me. I had this new situation at Karmaloop where I came over mm-hmm. to develop mm-hmm. their more premium category, you know, as the, mm-hmm. as the boutique world was shifting in that direction. Everybody was scrambling to you know, get a little piece of that, right? Present some brands at a little higher end. So when I went over there and started developing that, I got that phone call and it just lined up, you know? So, so that's why that project is, it's special to me because number one, it connects to something real, you know, me seeing people in my neighborhood wearing that shit, you know, 88, 89, mm-hmm. the shoe was super expensive. I mean, it was unheard of. You had to do something. I mean, there's no way a person that worked a regular job in my age group or a couple years above mm-hmm. me was buying that shoe. So you know who was buying that shoe. So there was an allure. There was, this mystique about it. And it was just, you know, it was just some cool ass shit. So
it was even a mythical shoe when you tried to recreate it, right? Like finding it in the archives.
I couldn't find it. I couldn't. They didn't have it.
It was
they
like a dream.
Yeah, they did not. They did not have any evidence of the crown shoe. The crown.
That little insignia on the forum. Yeah.
They didn't have any, and I'm not saying, I'm not sure if they explored the whole archive, but, you know, at hand's reach, you know, as a resource to help develop a project, they could not locate any information. So I had to do the rounds and the shoe. So obviously I went to Clark first. Clark understood. He knew exactly what it was. And he sent me in a few directions. And one of the directions he sent me in was DJ M's. Mm-hmm. Who is, obviously not only, has a legacy as a DJ, you know, but is an avid Adidas collector, mm-hmm. specializes. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe he specializes in Adidas.
Totally.
So, so he sent me one. It was a size 13. It looked huge. It was like, you know, and it was like a faded blue. Over time, and it had, you know, gray and silver stitching on the crown. It was like, holy shit, like this shoe I seen as a kid, hustlers running around with them, and I'm there on the handball court listening to MC Light, you know what I mean? And I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I secured the shoe, me and Dion made a trip to Portland. Might add that trip, I went through the you know what I mean, security, and I got pulled to the side and they tore my whole shoe. You know what I mean? And they took the shoe and it was in a big sandwich bag and they lifted it and they took it. And they're like, what the fuck? And it's this big old shoe. And I'm like, yo, what's going on here? And Dion's just off to the side talking to the guy, like, yeah, you know, the Red Sox, whatever. I'm like,
oh, no.
You know what I mean? So, but went to Portland with the shoe. And from there, people really understood what it was, you know?
Frank, after that, you had a 3-pack of unreleased New Balance 1600s. I know you were really upset about those shoes not coming out. Can you talk about that project?
Yeah. So first, long time ago, you know what I mean? A whole other world, a whole other time, a whole other person. So the way I reacted to that experience was one who, you know, after leaving Concepts and having a young family, I'm just trying to, you know, move forward. I'm trying to build a life for me and my family. And so that project was very much connected to my livelihood, you know what I mean? To my equity, right? To my to my positioning, right? If I, you know, like Joe pointed out, you know, I have a couple shoes that, you know, the same year, whatnot, and I'm growing and my brand is growing and my value is growing and my perspective is now being pulled into other things and people value that. I have to keep it going. I got kids. I got to, you know, eventually went to college, right? So that's why I responded in such a way, you know. All due respect to New Balance, they came to me very clear and open and transparent. They you know, my relationship with them was tight. They allowed me, even just starting the project in the way that it was, me being an independent, you know what I mean, per standalone, coming from an account that they have found great success with, me starting a new thing and them trusting that I can take some of those values that I had, you know what I mean, that I was working with and move on and be a new partner, you know, not in place of, but in addition to. It didn't work out. You know, I think politics of the city, you know, Boston was one where shops tended to, you know, tend to fight, you know, back in the day, tend to fight for positioning, right? We had two very prominent, I mean, you know, how many other cities had two shops like that, you know, Bodega and Concept? So there was a very, very much of a competitive, you know, atmosphere to the detriment of my project. And to the detriment of even relationships on the strength of it, right? So I chalked that up to, you know, again, that competitive nature. I was upset at the time. It affected me, you know, the way I processed it with somebody that was, you know, viewing it and living it in that way. But it was a learning, you know, it was definitely a learning because I think people feel that, you know, it's always all love. You know what I mean? It's always like, yo, Frank the Butcher, I know that guy. Give him whatever he wants. Yo, let's do this. Hey, Concept. No, sometimes you got to get in there and you got to figure it out. And that was one of the situations where it just wasn't figured out. And to speak on me being upset publicly, you know, it was just one of the only ways I can really express myself. You know what I mean? It was one of the only ways to get it off my chest. You know, I felt slighted at the time. And I look back and, you know, I understand it more now. And I probably wouldn't have responded that way. You know,
I love
those shoes, you know.
Me too. I found a blog post I wrote like 10 years ago or 9 years ago or whatever before we were doing the show. And I remember being so hyped when I saw those 1600s with the star perforations or the debossing on it. Yeah. And this was coming from me from a year earlier. I remember calling Concepts all day to do a phone order when the Kennedy 999s released there and finally getting through literally 6 hours sitting in my apartment calling and finally getting through and got the bag with it and all that stuff. So people were disappointed, Frank, when those shoes didn't come out.
Yeah, me too. I was
I remember when me and Ronnie went up to Boston to do the Butcher's Block. I remember in that office, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like a long room, skinny long room. And I remember you had the samples on the desk and you were talking to me and Ronnie about the project and how you were so, so passionate. You loved those shoes and that, you know, you were like, there's some like static right now, but I remember, I vaguely remember being in that, your office, and seeing those shoes on your desk, and, you know, you talking about this project that I have a follow up and we'll see where it goes. But yeah.
You know, for me back then, I looked at it as turning a corner. You know what I mean? It was a 1600, right? So the company I worked with previous, you know, Concepts, that wasn't a shoe that they worked with, right? So it was a fresh start on a new model that I can really have ownership over, right?
And nobody was really doing 1600s at the time.
Nobody. You know, doing the types of things I did on the shoe, the star embossed on the toe, people weren't really doing stuff like that, you know? Back then, I'm sure there was examples, you know, I think Matt Hectic had done something possibly similar a little bit. But even just the creative of the shoe, I felt like, all right, like I'm getting funky. You know what I mean? Like I got some elbow room, like, you know, and the plan was three, we dropped two, you know, with every shoe, you know what I mean? You got a chance to get a letter, then you get this white version. It was like a culmination of all the things I learned previous up to that moment. And I felt like it was a perfect platform for me to showcase all that I've learned, all that I've, you know what I mean, sharpened my tools. And when I didn't have the opportunity to do so, you know, it broke my heart.
Frank, being at Boylston, obviously you mentioned that it was under the Karma Loop umbrella. Karma Loop run by Greg Selko, kind of a legendary figure for many reasons in the streetwear industry. What was it like working with him? Do you have any crazy stories from it?
Only crazy stories.
He was one of one, man. He was one of one. I say this, man. He was singular in his vision. You know what I mean? When he locked in on something, he did not. Reality didn't matter. You know what I mean? And that's why he is who he is. You know what I mean? He identifies some type of solution, something he's trying to solve, right? Karma Loop TV was one of those solutions, right? And it predates all of this shit. You know what I mean?
Shouts to Dennis Tedesco. Wasn't he hosting a little bit?
Yeah. Shout to Dennis. Yeah. And shout to big love to Dennis. That's my guy. That's my guy. And and man, he was in it. He was in it. He was of it. He understood it. And if you talk to him now, you know exactly. You know what I mean? He's a mind inside of this. You know what I mean? I remember young Dennis just caring about things and having such a positive attitude and not being, not being too cool about things, not being too, you know what I mean? Yeah. And with that kid-like, at the time, I thought, this kid-like energy, he just absorbed and learned and sharpened so many skills. You know what I mean? Outfit grid. Oh, I made fun of outfit grid. Oh my God, did I have a party?
You were shitting on Dennis?
Yeah. I was playing, you know, we were playing with friends, right? You know? But when outfit grid started, it was just something, it was just something to make fun of for me. It was just something, outfit, come on, man. Just me being the older guy, just when these new things happen, sometimes, right? Boy, was I wrong. You know what I mean?
He loves it. He still has fun with it.
Yeah.
He's like one of the nicest guys. And that's a testament to why he's been doing it for so long and for such a young age. But
he's a great guy.
Yeah. Selko had like laser vision for what he was like. You know, I can't believe even FaZe Clan, he was involved with FaZe Clan recently, thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure and everyone probably bought into the vision, right? At the time?
Yep. Everybody bought into the vision. Some people bought in further and would jump off cliffs. You know what I'm saying? For him, we've had some bang out, he would do these live Karma Loop events, right? And one time we did it in a warehouse in Brooklyn. It's one time. So that's when one of the first times Action Bronson came to town.
Okay.
Yeah. I brought him because he was featured on one of those Karma Loop live things, live streams. Mm-hmm. I forget what he was doing, just being himself or whatever. But Listen, I don't remember. I'm not going to say something wild.
right. No,
yeah, but. Yeah. But, yeah. I, you know, he, he's, he, you know, Yeah.
Am I bugging her? Speaking of Bronson, did Action Bronson end up with one of those 1600s?
Yeah, I gave him one.
Yeah.
We had Action Bronson twice on Sneaker Shopping. I think he brought you up twice. Even if it was off camera, I know that both times he brought it up, that silhouette that you, the New Balance and your relationship with them and the designs that you've done still stick in people's minds, obviously. But I remember him specifically bringing it up twice. Yeah.
Shouts to my guy, Bronson. Very early. I met him after the Lecter album. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, Dante Ross was managing him at the time too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you guys know Dante.
Of course. Gets the gas face.
Dante, another legend. So you know, Dante was I don't mean to go into this story. It feels like this
That's
is
what we're here
people,
for.
People would be interested in. So met him through Dante, you know, fast friends, you know what I'm saying? He loved New Balance. Mm-hmm. That was really something that we really talked about, New Balance. Actually, I only had two Kennedys and I gave him one. And that's the one he wore in the video, you know, with the convertible BMW on the basketball court. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So he wore the Kennedy in there. That was the one I gave him. But he loved New Balance, man. It's like some New York shit, some Queen shit too. You know what I mean? May and him, like anything with a reflector, anything with you know, it's that graffiti culture, that polo culture, that reflectors and colors and suede and the grays. He's very much of that. So I even brought him up there. You know, first trip up to the company. You know, he loved it. He's great.
Oh, Dunn froze. Uh-oh. Come back. I don't want him to miss this part.
Oh, he says he lost power.
Wow. Okay. It's weird. Sorry, Frank.
Well, I just signed up for 2/3. I'm telling you that right now.
Okay. He said fully out or Zoom on phone maybe. Oh, wait, he's back. He's back. He's back now. Can you wait? I was like, why is there this awkward silence? There's never. And then sure enough.
You look at his face and it's I'm like,
damn, this story fell so flat. Nobody gives a fuck.
There he is.
Yo, I have no idea.
Wow.
Dude, literally my light went out. I'm like, I was like, did my internet Yo, that was crazy.
Did you lose your QuickTime?
Yeah, no. I'm still got my recording. Sorry about that, Frank. I heard the stove beep out there. I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah, you got the air fryer on too hard or something?
I have no clue. At first I thought I was frozen, but then I realized my light was out. I'm back, baby. I'm back.
Okay, just a heads up for the audience. For the first time, we've had a lot of technical difficulties, but we've always managed to keep it going. For the first time, Brendan Dunn, his power just went out, so we had to regroup. We are back now Frank the Butcher. Brendan, let's pick
I did
off.
Pay the light bill, just so everybody knows. It's not an issue. It's not an issue with Con Ed.
Okay, and Brendan, I just want to be clear. I made it clear that I wasn't moving forward with just 2 out of 3.
Exactly.
Thank you.
For the full experience.
Thank you. I don't know if, you know, maybe it was fate because we got to talk about Reebok.
Yeah, the Bach boys.
And I didn't want to miss this part because, Frank, you've been at Reebok for a couple of years now. Tell me about first joining the brand in 2017. Was it a scary experience in any way of being like, oh, I got to be all about this one brand because you're such a diverse guy when it comes to sneakers and your resume?
Yeah. It was some of that. It was definitely some of that. But I was at the point in my life where I needed to transcend all of that. Like, what am I going to do? Like, am I just going to be out here, you know, on seating lists? Like, is this what my life's about? You know what I mean? Am I going to be out here overstaying my welcome? I need to find the next step. I need to start figuring out, you know, this upward mobility. Again, today, maybe, I'm not saying it's easy ever, but today people have blueprints. There's guys out here that have a plan that can see all the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But back then I didn't. So I was very conscious of overstaying my welcome, right? Mm. You know, in terms of that value of collaboration and continuing to do those things. I didn't want to, you know, let me figure out the next phase of my life. So had a few good conversations previous to Reebok. Wasn't sure what I was going to decide on. And then I had a meeting with Reebok, checked in with them, had a great combo with Todd Krinsky. And we rolled from there. And I think part of it was I've had a long relationship with Reebok. You know what I mean? The building was very familiar. Yes. Walking through the Canton campus felt like home, you know, whether it was with Dion for concepts, buying trips, you know, back in the day into that building where, you know, Matt Ting and other people would be. This is early.
The Ting,
you know?
Dynasty.
Yeah, exactly. The Ting dynasty continued, obviously. But I had a long relationship with them. I had a long relationship with Mitchell and Ness, right? At Concepts, you know, those, you know, kind of the first, you know, innovations, right? We were trying to do things differently. So when we do a Timberland and we connected a Mitchell and Ness project and made it, those things weren't really done. So it gave me an opportunity to meet so many different people in and out of those companies that when I went to have those conversations, it felt like something that, you know, I was prepared to do. But yeah, I was a little nervous. And obviously it takes me, you know, it makes getting dressed a little easier, you know?
But Reebok was a thing for you even growing up. Like, I remember you saying that you saw people with classic leathers on back in Worcester.
Yeah. So absolutely. There was like this Hispanic set of kids, right? When I grew up, right? So, you know, the dynamic of where I grew up, right? You know, I'm Puerto Rican, but, you know, my parents came here young. So English is my primary, you know, language, and the culture that comes with being in those neighborhoods, being at that age, I skewed in that way, hip hop and, you know what I mean? And sneaker culture and all of that stuff, right? But I had a large group of friends, and some of my friends were more in the, you know, closer to the Hispanic culture, maybe closer to Puerto Rico, maybe came when they were, you know what I mean? When they were kids, as opposed to being born here like me. So those kids, there was a lot, there was like a trend amongst that set that, you know, loved classic Reeboks, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, the things that we call the classic collection now, but they were just so into it. So there was like a dipping in and out of it. You know what I mean? It was like this coexistence of everything. They're being very aware of the Nike and Jordan and the Adidas stuff that's happening. And then there was this, you know, thing that was more cultural, right? And that was in the beginning. And after that, when 90s Reebok basketball started becoming, you know, after that, it was open, you know?
And what was it like coming into Reebok? Obviously, you mentioned Matt Ting, and there's people like Naoki working there, doing all the collaborations, but just bringing more of your inspiration into a brand like Reebok that was maybe tied more to like the CrossFit end of it.
You know, public view, that's absolutely, you know what I mean? What they see, right, is this company that skews more towards fitness. That's the company. That's the primary goal. But in the building, there was such a passionate group of people who never took their eye off the ball in that regard, right? You look at through all those years, the programs, the certified network, the partnerships, they really put a lot of stock in the shops that supported them in that space, right? In that sneaker space. So when, you know, obviously it skews the other way, you know, and you feel that publicly. But when I got in there, it didn't feel like it was missing. You know, you just need some fine tuning, right? You're forever learning. You're forever trying to figure out the next set of partners, you know. But these guys were on it. So when I joined the board, it wasn't like I was coming to save anybody or anything like that. You know what I mean? It was me coming in, taking the experiences and the perspective and, you know, that everything that I got up to that point and helping them refine the things that they were already working towards, you know. A lot of consulting, a lot of voice, a lot of, you know, it's just something that it was just perfect timing for me to show up and have that perspective, you know?
And one thing, obviously the Complex umbrella, we got to talk about the Hot Ones collaboration. You were instrumental in that. Talk about that project and how you set out to be to develop it and the process and how it came about.
I'm not just saying this as I'm on the show, but I've had a long relationship with Complex.
Yes.
Showed me Wild Love early, you know, put me in, you know, lists and asked me to even write a couple times for certain, you know, there's always been a real synergy between me and my friends at Complex, you know, down to Rich. When I see Rich out in public, the big man says hello. You know what I mean?
What about Noah Callahan Bever wearing the business as usual hat for literally 2 years straight?
That's amazing. That's amazing. 2 years straight.
Yeah.
Shout to NCB too.
Yeah.
You know, so when I got a phone call about the interest in the building, shouts to Nico, Nico Bono. Little fun fact about Nico Bono, he's gonna love this. His uncle, Joey Bono, right, is an extra in all types of mafia flicks.
Really? I couldn't tell by the name if he was Italian. Okay.
Dogs. I'm talking about from Raging Bull to like Analyze This.
Been around.
We got to get him with Premium Pete. They'll have a Malbec session.
Absolutely. Yeah, shout out to Nico. So Nico is the person who managed that project. He's a foodie himself. He has a high regard for food and your show. And I mean, he knew everything about it before it was even pitched. And all I did was, be blessed enough to know you guys so well that someone would give me a call and break it down for me. Yo, this is, you know what I mean? That's a lot of it. A lot of it is just being available. It could have came through Nick, you know, I think Nick kind of set it off. Hey, my brother, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we kind of worked it through there, but everyone was really excited. Everyone was really excited. Huge fans of the show, you know.
Can you talk about it all? What's coming next from that project? Well, I've heard some things internally. Can we say anything on here?
Oh, no. I really can't. You know what I mean? I'm not privy to everything. The people that manage that project, you know, I want to make sure that they speak when it's time. Again, shout out to Nico. But all I know is that anytime Hot Ones is talked about in the building, everyone's excited. You know, it's just one of those projects where it just feels good. It's tangible, right? Like you can relate to these guys. Everybody's on the show. Everybody's, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, in rare form, right? You can't be too cool. You're crying, right? Like mm-hmm. there's this whole experience there that is very much like the Reebok experience, right? Where everything's not always so perfect, you know, everything's so clean, right? You know. So very much a connection there. And we love the show and the project came out amazing.
What was the biggest difference? Because you did your own Reebok collaborations with Business as Usual beforehand, and now you're working on collaborations through the Reebok side. What was it like to make that change?
Well, I think one thing is you know, you have to know your place. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of what I did previous, I have a job to do. In my opinion, can only extend so far. So you got to respect, you know, what's happening in the project. I can't be Mr. King collaboration, you know. So I understood that right off jump. And secondly, I think that I provided some much needed perspective from the partner side. Because sometimes, you know, dealing with a partner and trying to execute their, you know, their ambitions and, you know what I mean, and managing expectations, sometimes that those types of things can fall through the cracks. Just because it's just people, you know, people doing their best, people trying to figure things out. So I think for me, one of the things I try to do is really lend perspective on how to treat partners, how mm-hmm. to communicate with them better. Not saying that they were bad at it, but more about saying, how do we make it better? How do we fine tune these relationships to get the best out of people? Because I know that there were times where maybe a little extra pliability from the company or a little extra transparency from the company I was working with might have made things move a little easier, a little smoother. So I really tried to lend some of that, you know?
Frank, in 2018, some big sneaker news on the internet. We started this conversation with like celebrities wearing them, but celebrities wearing sneakers. But Kanye in the OG colorway of the Reebok Daytona DMX in 2018, fully locked into an Adidas deal. When that happens, does it reverberate around the office? What's it?
Yeah.
It has to.
Yeah, it does. Of course. I mean, there's no. I mean, I'm sure there is a metric, but. The Kanye effect is real. You know, we can't front on that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you don't have the same taste as him or if you don't appreciate all that he does. The Kanye effect is real. You know what I mean? So when Kanye puts it, you know, with Kanye, he don't just wear something once. It mm-hmm. almost like, I almost feel like he'll throw on an outfit and wear it for 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
which is great, right? So I don't know. When he touches something, what it did was validate something that we already loved internally. We love the shoe. You know, we always want plans and we have ambitions for a shoe. We want to make sure that the consumer, you know, loves it as much as us. And sometimes we got to convince people. But when someone like Kanye comes along and wears something unannounced, I don't think he got it for free. I mean, the shoe, right.
You didn't send it to him.
It was a surprise. So yeah. That kind of thing brings a little much needed validation sometimes. So when we see things like that, we go, you know what? We're doing our thing. Mm. Maybe we haven't, been as successful as other companies in doing certain things, but I think that there's a real credibility to the brand. There's a real credibility to the vector. You know what I mean? An unshaken credibility. So even if there isn't a financial success, or even if we're not the number two or number three brand, right? There is this credibility, there's this legacy that if we foster it and nurture it, it's a beautiful thing. And I think that that's one of those examples how people gravitate to our product without much coercing, because there is such a legacy and value to our brand.
And now he's probably in the zone that he's not only wearing it for fashion, he's probably wear testing these shoes because he's designing his own.
Yeah. But when you got Stephen Smith, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anything is possible.
Obviously, the Kanye connection.
He's a Dr. Dre of sneakers design. Right. You know, he had a couple Firm albums, but most of them the hits. You know what I'm saying? Old man reference showing my age.
Love it.
The Kanye thing, too, makes sense because obviously Kanye is signed to Adidas or has this gigantic deal with Adidas, and Reebok is under Adidas. Frank, I got to ask you another question that I totally understand if can't say anything, but how do we feel about the rumor that Adidas may be selling Reebok?
I mean, it is what it is. It is what it is. It's never been, listen, it's like, it's a business and we work there.
Business
we
as understand usual.
It's business as usual. You know what I mean? We know what it is. We know the struggles that we've had. We know that, this year has been even harder. As a business, all parties need to do what's best for the business, right? But Reebok as an entity, Reebok as a brand, we're going to continue to work. We got work to do. We have this amazing legacy and this credibility. So when we hear things like that, obviously we wait for the clarifications and we try to understand it. But when you zoom out, it is what it is. How many good companies have moved from place to place before they, saw their full potential, right? So, it could be sometimes a little daunting. It comes out of nowhere, whatever. But the reality is it's a business. And we're just going to continue to push forward and do what we got to do.
Yeah. Who knows? You might join VF Corp with Timberland and Supreme.
Yeah,
as hinted at.
And just to be clear, who knows, right? There's no, we're not privy to any details. I mean, it is what it is. Exactly what was said in the latest announcement. What was said to us is very much aligned. There's never I'm gonna say this, but over here I'll give you a little extra. It's very much in line. So everything that was said is what we received too. But it is what it is.
Well, Frank, we can't thank you enough taking us through your journey. As you said, you are such like a lifelong friend of our brand, and we thank you for joining us and so much sneaker history. And we're super excited to see what you guys are cooking up and for 2021. And again, thank you so much for joining us. You always have the platform to come back and the next project we want to talk about for sure. So hopefully we're doing this again in studio on video in maybe a year or so.
Well, guys, I appreciate the love. I appreciate the, you guys always reaching out with showing respect, much love, and be safe. Wear a mask.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Come on, bros. Peace.
It's great.
Our producer is Dave Matthews. Our associate producer is Jasmine Plata. Sound engineering done by William Smith. Special thanks to Jennifer Stewart and Shiva Bayet. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.